So, we see a distorted picture of the delivering power of the Lamb. Heli, one of these cloud children, became giddy in the heavenly elevation to which she was lifted by this Lamb. This is myth. Lost her hold upon his back and fell off into the sea. Thereafter called Hellespont or Helles Sea, the ancient name for the ocean. Phrixus, the other child of this mystic cloud seed, held on to the mystic Lamb and was brought in safety to Colchis, the citadel of reconciliation, the city of refuge. Nephele's Lamb was there sacrificed to Jupiter, as those who were saved by him would have been without him, as Christ, the true Aries, was sacrificed in our place and we escape. The myth has it, it was this Lamb of Nephele that yielded the golden fleece that we hear so much about in mythology, which made him who possessed it the envy of kings and which constituted the highest treasure to be found with the children of men. What an image of the greatest treasure of life, the righteous garment, clothing, the righteousness of Christ covering us, and we who wear it, beneficiaries of his sacrifice. It's worthy of remark that the Egyptians celebrated a sacred feast to the ram upon the entrance of the sun into the sign of Aries. Now, the distortions and the mythology has changed the truth into a lie, and they worship the creature instead of the Creator. But the message was there. What are the surrounding Decans? Cassiopeia. Nothing less than a picture of the true Church of God lifted up out of all of its evils. The enthroned woman, seated in heavenly places, as in the previous passage, which pictured the two fishes bound. And I said a few Sundays ago, like it or lump it in your traditions, God's a polygamist and always has been. Now, I ain't no Mormon, and I don't preach that we follow God in that godliness. Only God can handle three women. No man can. You better figure that out. Even the Mormons couldn't have done it if they hadn't got them in a desert place where they couldn't leave. God, hey, I'm dead serious. God's a polygamist. He had two wives in the Old Testament. It's as clear as a bell. He had Israel and her treacherous sister Judah, and he was married to both of them. Now, it's bad enough to have two wives, but if they're both sisters, that compounds the problem. God had two of them. And he's going to marry a third one. Now, two of them are still chained down here because they wouldn't accept him. He's seated on a throne. But we're drinking at the fount as the southern fish and seated in heavenly places with him as the enthroned woman. It's simple as that. To say much more about that is to adorn the obvious. In addition, down here is the sea monster. Let me talk about the glorified woman for just a moment. Her common name is Cassiopeia, the beautiful, the enthroned. Plushade derives the name by tracing its etymology as the boundary of Typhon's power, the delivered from all evil. Four stars of the third magnitude, which never set, form the seat upon which this woman sits. Just think about that for a moment. We are seated with Christ in heavenly places. The four stars that comprise the throne, which is our faith position, are stars which never set. I could preach for an hour on that. About 300 years ago, there occurred in this constellation a great mystery to astronomers. You want to know? You want to know what happened about 300 years ago? In this constellation, which is the type of the church in her faith position, it's not in that book. No, he's not in the one I gave you. Lucille, I've never seen you look so mean at me. I'm going to be nice. About 300 years ago, there occurred in this constellation what was a great mystery to astronomers. Oh, I don't know if I should tell you. About 300 years ago, there occurred in this constellation what was a great mystery to astronomers. A star, surpassing in brilliancy and splendor all the fixed stars, suddenly appeared on the 10th of November, 1572. And after shining in continuous glory for 16 months, disappeared and has never since been seen. Now, I'm going to skip the next paragraph and just go on. I mean, I got to save that next paragraph to some other time. Otherwise, we'll be here too long. Just gnash your teeth and get over it and don't keep going. And if there is any one constellation of the sky or any figure among these celestial frescoes especially fitted to be the symbol and representative of the church, particularly in its enfranchised and glorified condition, its faith position, it's this. Look at its names. The first star marking the figure of this woman is called Shedar, which means the freed. And Rukbah and Dat al-Kursa, which signify the enthroned and the seated. Next to her is the glorious star-crowned enthroned king we just seen. While living by faith and seated on a throne, we still have to contend with Cetus, the sea monster. That miserable image of the devil on this earth. The largest of all the constellations, this miserable monster of the sea, a vast scaly beast with an enormous head, mouth, and front paws, the second Decan. This is the true Leviathan of Job and Isaiah. It is a downward constellation bordering on the lower regions. One of its characteristic stars, Myra, situated in the neck of the scaly monster, is the most variable and unsteady star in the entire heavens. From a star of the second magnitude, it dwindles away until it becomes invisible once in about every 300 days. And once it disappeared for four whole years. a striking symbol of the devious one, the arch deceiver. Its name, Myra, means the rebel. Now why is it you don't find this monster called the bruised? From earliest time, they've been identified. But that monster is connected and held by the same band that the enthroned king controls. He puts his two fish, that are those tribes that rejected him, in a bondage. But the same band also sets the limits on this monstrous cetus. God will not release control. Biggest miserable monster in the whole skies. But our enthroned king has got the leash on him. The same God that ties and those lost tribes as well as the kingdom of Judah, the divorced wife and the rejected dispersed one, think they truly are under God's band, so is old Cetus. The name of the first of the Cetus stars, Menkar, means the chained enemy. The second star, Diphda, means the overthrown and the thrust down. From earliest time, these names were attached to this monster. Listen to what God said in His Word. This is way back in that oldest book of the Bible, Job, chapter 41, verses 1 to 10. God's talking to Job. Canst thou draw out Leviathan with a hook, or his tongue with the cord which thou lettest down? Can you reach down and grab Leviathan, the old sea monster's tongue, pull it out? Can thou put a hook into his nose or bore his jaw through with a thorn? Boy, I'd just shout thinking about that. I like that. Will he make many supplications unto thee? Look at this monster. You think he doesn't beg anybody? Listen to me, Job. You know, Job decided he was going to criticize God. Can you draw out Leviathan with an hook? Can you put a hook into his nose or bore his jaw through with a thorn? Will he make many supplications unto thee? Will he speak soft words unto thee? Will he make a covenant with thee? Wilt thou take him for a servant forever? Wilt thou play with him as with a bird? Or wilt thou bind him for thy maiden? Shall thy companions make a banquet of him? Shalt they part him among the merchants? Can thou fill his skin with barbed irons or his head with fish spears? Good old loving God's going to work him over. Behold, the hope of him is in vain. Shall not one be cast down even at the sight of him? None is so fierce that dare stir him up. But he whom no man can take or bind, the Lamb has in his power. Isaiah prophesied of a day when, quoth the Lord, with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan the piercing serpent, even Leviathan that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. Isaiah 27:1. We read those passages and fail to understand that these Old Testament people understood the message and what it symbolized in the skies. The ram that provides the way of enthroning the church, conquering the sea monster, becomes Perseus in the third decan. And Perseus is the hero, like Hercules, who symbolizes the conquering work of that ram and the Lord that was slain, the breaker. He's the breaker that Micah says went before Israel and made a way for them. I'm going to read Sice again. Still greater vigor and animation in this whole scene is set out in the third accompanying side piece of the enthroned Lamb. Micah chapter 2, verses 12 and 13 prophesies of a time when the flock of God shall be gathered, their king pass before them, and the Lord on the head of them, and says that this shall be when, quote, the breaker is come up before them. The Lamb in the Apocalypse or Book of Revelation is the breaker of the seals, the breaker of apostate nations. He's the same in the second Psalm. This breaker in these very acts is the precise picture in this constellation. It is the figure of a mighty man stepping with one foot on the brightest part of the Milky Way. Let me find him again. It is the figure of a mighty man stepping with one foot on the brightest part of the Milky Way, wearing a helmet on his head and wings on his feet, holding aloft a great sword in his right hand and carrying away the blood-dripping head of Gorgon in his left. See if you can get in close to that head in his left hand. Can you see it? Right there. That terrible head with serpents for hair. Now listen to his name. His name in the constellation is Peretz, Grecianized into Perses or Perseus. It means exactly what Micah's prophecy translates, the breaker. The name of the star in his left foot is Atik, which means he who breaks. The name of the brightest middle star in the figure is Al-Ghanib, the one who carries away, and Mirfak, who helps. And when Perseus comes to the meridian, the most brilliant portion of the starry heavens opens out its sublimest magnificence in the eastern hemisphere. Now again, the myths distort it, but behind the myth, the lie is the truth. Even the myths had one of the most beloved and admired of all the hero gods, Perseus. He was the son of the Divine Father who came upon Danai in the form of a shower of gold. No sooner was he born than he and his mother were put into a chest and cast into the sea. But Jupiter so directed that they were rescued by the fishermen on the coast of one of the Cyclades and carried to the king, who treated them with great kindness and entrusted to them the care of the temple of the goddess of wisdom. Perseus, rising genius and great courage, made him a favorite of the gods. At a great feast of the king, at which the nobles were expected to make some splendid present to their sovereign, Perseus, who was so specially indebted to the king's favors, not wishing to be behind the rest, or feebler in his expression than were his obligations, agreed to bring the head of Medusa, the only one of the three horrible Gorgons subject to mortality. This is myth. These Gorgons were fabled beings with bodies grown indissolubly together and covered with impenetrable scales. They had tusks like boars, yellow wings, and brazen hands, and were very dangerous. Their heads were full of serpents in place of hair, and their very looks had power to turn to stone anyone on whom they fixed their gaze. To equip Perseus for his expedition, Pluto lent him his helmet, which had the power of rendering the wearer invisible. Minerva furnished him with her buckler, resplendent as a polished mirror. Mercury gave him wings for his feet and a diamond sword for his hand. Thus furnished, he mounted into the air. Led by the goddess of wisdom, he came upon the tangled monsters. He, grasping the same in his left hand, he again mounted into the air. And over Libya's sands his airy journey sped, the gory drops distilled as swift he flew, and from each drop envenomed serpents grew. By this victory, the myth has it, he was rendered immortal, took his place among the stars, ever holding fast the reeking head of Gorgon, and it was on his return from this brave deed that he saw the beautiful Andromeda chained to the rock, the chained woman, and the terrible monster of the sea advancing to devour her, on condition that she should become his wife. He broke her chains, plunged his sword into the monster that sought her life, fought off and turned to stone the tyrant Phineas, who sought to prevent the wedding, and made Andromeda his bride, begetting many worthy sons and daughters, and by varied administrations of miraculous power, changing portions of the earth and its governments and rulers, returning betimes to bless the countries that honored him. Myth, to be sure. But as the centaur, the two-natured one, was the good, a sister of mankind, disliked, not approved, but coming to heal and to teach and to help and giving his life for him, as the virgin was pure, the myth still portrayed the hero in Perseus, the heavenly symbol of Christ the Breaker, who delivers from the chains of bondage in this world and makes her his wife and takes the keys of death, hell, and the grave. And the serpent forever appears in the evil side of the spectrum. No natural events in the seasons or in the history of man could ever serve as a foundation for such a story as this. Here is a divine human son begotten of a golden shower from the deity, a child of affliction. I'm reading Sice again now. A child of affliction and persecution from his very birth, but predestined by the heavenly powers to live and triumph. The seed of the woman, the lamb that was slain, going forward at the head of his people as the breaker now, bringing death and destruction to the monsters of evil, setting wrong captives free and joining them to himself in glory everlasting. There's nothing else anywhere that will adequately account for the existence of this story but the record in Revelation of what Christ has done and is doing. That we might understand this figure is still further manifest in the facts and names and the reeking snake-covered head grasped of the hero. Medusa means the trodden underfoot. The name of the principal star in this Gorgon head, Al-Ghul. You shouldn't have trouble with that word. We have a cognate in it. Contracted into Al-Ghul, which means the evil spirit. The same is also a variable star, like Myra. It changes about every 3 days from a star of the second magnitude to one of the fourth. So the stars in the head of the Gorgon means the trodden underfoot in its name. The stars mean the evil spirit, and they are variable, deceptive stars. Changing from the second to one of the fourth magnitude and doing it every 3.5 hours. Rosh Satan and Al-One are other names of the stars in this head, which means Satan's head, the weakened, and the subdued. The invincible subduer and breaker is none other than the lamb, the biblical parrots, the Persian Berkshuash, taking to himself his great power and enforcing his saving dominion and authority for the full redemption of his people. So ends the second segment of four. And we come to what Joseph Sice calls the Day of the Lord. Taurus the bull charges on the scene, but we're in another section of the heavens when we come to that. If I put you to sleep, don't call me. But if you're alive and awake and you want me to go ahead and finish these, not tonight, most likely. I got another word or two to say. But I can just leave the stars and let you figure out the rest of it, or I can go to the kingdom portion, the last four, to the triumphant Leo the lion, who comes as the Lion of Judah. Only God could hurl in the magnitude of space the revelation from heaven of the wrath of God against all ungodliness, and it's always been there. The pyramid reached up and grabbed it and mapped it in its rock innards. And God, through prophets and shadows and diverse ways, spoke but in these last days is spoken unto us by His Son, and the literal hypostasis or substance of God struck a tent in human flesh and became the revelation of God. And I don't need, I've said many times, I can take just one book of this Bible and preach the rest of my life on it. I don't need anything but one book. Don't care which one you give me out of the 66, I can preach the rest of my life on it. Every time I preach through a book of the Bible, you that have listened to me know, I preach the whole Bible using that one book as a window to look at it. But to a world that looks on, and to a scientific world that would crowd God out, as the Song of Asher declares it, the God of the forefront was there before they got to the corner. And God's not going to fall off of His throne because some smart aleck thinks He's discovered some new truth. God was there all the time. I don't need to dwell on the stars all my life. I've got 8 years preaching this book. I can have a few weeks talking about the stars. My fundamental message is God's in control, and that means we're in good hands.